Roxette took the world by storm with their first hit, The Look. Songwriter Per Gessle wanted the band's second album, Look Sharp, to be, quote, a little more programmed, digital, and modern, end quote, than their first effort, Pearls of Passion. So he got a synthesizer, and in the process of learning to use it, wrote The Look. Daniel Nilsson believes Support should be a little more programmed, digital, and modern as well. Not only does his proactive approach to Support reduce Support inquiries, it drives more sales through channel partners. This week he joins me on Next in Queue to discuss why Daniel believes in always being available for customer support, how preventative support impacts product design, how good onboarding impacts support, how great channel sales and support can drive revenue, tips and tricks for providing great channel sales support, lessons from marketing applied to support, and the critical attribute for successful support professionals. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy 2 Vision. Eliminate blind spots and see right through every conversation with Happy 2 Vision. Learn more at HAPPITU.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Daniel Nilsson, thanks for being Next in Queue. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you, I think, mainly because I don't think I've ever known anyone who works for so many companies all at the same time. So let's see if I can knock down some of these much skills, up strategy, proto anything, new link, privacy, hard skills. One Life Dreams. What am I missing? There's probably a few more in there.
There's actually a few under the table secret projects. Not under the table, but secret projects. So we keep it there. I think this is perfect.
That is a lot. You clearly have an entrepreneurial spirit. And we're going to talk about really building support systems when you are growing companies. But I guess my next question is, when do you sleep?
Actually pretty good. 7 hours every night.
Okay. Okay.
Really efficient. I think, you know, for us people that have worked in support and kind of enjoy that part of helping people, we love to maybe be efficient, but don't be too efficient. But you have to be very efficient, have templates for everything. That's when we do it successfully. Because I do run the support from our own companies. So I do answer a lot of support messages even.
Templates, processes, all very important. When did you first recognize that maybe at a company that you were building or working with that the support structure wasn't there and it was critical and you had to figure it out?
I think like joining a startup is always a really good way to learn properly how important support are. So I joined this IT startup that was like built up from the ground up, and I joined day one in principle. But you know, when you're both selling and then you have to do support at the same time, you understand how important those two things are together. So I was selling, and when the product don't work, when you do an installation, which, you know, it took you 2 months to get that meeting, and you're just sitting there, they're going to try the product and it just crashed. You just want to die. Yes. So yes, to do things very properly and do testing and support is extremely important, because that really matters. And I think, yeah, one pretty cool thing we did there was that I had to sell, but I became more like a sales engineer. So I had this amazing American guy, Jeff, of course, was his name. I mean, he was just so good, like really good. He could nag a customer until they cried and just said, here's my credit card, I'm going to just buy it. But even there, like he drilled me into having like a very good explanations to everything, to really take the time to understand what the customer is saying. So active listening, and really do my best to answer the customer in a way so I saw their problem. And I think that's where I kind of really got trained properly on how to do this.
And then so you learn from Jeff.
Yes.
That's Jeff, the answer. Sales guy also. Yeah.
The short answer is Jeff, the sales guy.
So let's talk about, if I'm in a startup or a very early stage company and I haven't really figured out support, number one, like, when should I start to build out my structure, and what does that look like?
Exactly. Because that's a very good question, because that's what I was thinking about when we were building up MuchKills. So MuchKills is like a SaaS product. A lot of people sign up. It's kind of fun and interesting and like a little bit strange and different. But okay, how do I handle this, and how do I make sure I catch potential bugs that it stops, you know, sales from happening? So I looked at many different systems, and I decided, you know what, in this case, I'm going to be as available as ever possible. Okay, it's a terrible thing for support, of course. I punish myself, but as available as possible. So I have email on the website. I have the phone number on the, like, my personal mobile phone number on the website. Don't worry, nobody ever calls, which is very interesting. I have intercom chat. So we choose intercom because they had this startup price and you get 90% discount. You know how it is. And it works amazing. I contact from customers, but it's never users. It's mostly customers, meaning the buyer, contact us on the intercom chat asking specific sales questions. And I'm a little bit shocked though how well it works. Not on the website, but inside the product. Very, very important. So our strategy is being super available all the time. I even got an Apple Watch so I can get a warning when I need to answer a support ticket, and just do it. And the reason for that, so why are you making yourself so available? Like in support, we kind of try to hold back the crazy customers sometimes because they're asking very strange questions. But if you do a really good product, you know what? They will not contact you. So if we have done a bad job, we should be punished. That's how I see it. We should be really punished for doing a bad job and therefore getting a lot of support.
Okay, so that's the lesson out there, kids. Make a really good product that isn't buggy, and then you don't have to worry about support as much. I wonder, can we talk about geography a little bit? With MuchKills, where are most of your customers, and how does that impact you? Because you're in Sweden, so are most of your customers in Sweden? Are they in the U.S.? Are they Europe, Africa, EMEA, all of it?
So we have one customer. This is so embarrassing. I shouldn't say this on like a podcast. So we have one or two customers in Sweden. Two, actually. Yeah, two. Is so low. and the rest are everywhere else. And everywhere else, when I say that, I mean everywhere else. They are in Singapore. Luckily, we're getting clients in Australia, which is like literally the other side of the planet, in Europe and in Canada and North America and Brazil. So,
it's a lot.
It's a lot, but I don't see it as a problem. I think like if you use these modern chat solutions, people accept that it's, as a customer, it's okay to wait 12 hours, but usually they only wait like 6 to 7 to 8 hours, but it would be okay. And that's why I have my watch, because I simply answer them quickly if they would contact me in the evening. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, we are a startup. We have to work a little bit extra. If you are a founder or something like that, that's just the way how life is. And it's okay. In the future, obviously, when we have a proper support team, that will never be possible. But at the moment, it works.
When do you decide, okay, I can handle most of support. People can reach out directly to me because I've got a good product that's not very buggy. And I'm willing to do that. When is the tipping point where you go, okay, now I need to build out a support team, whether that's one person or a handful of people? And what are the things that you think about when you start to do that? Do you spread them out geographically? Do you want them all working together? If there's more than one, I guess. And do you continue to use the same tools?
No, exactly. That's a super good question, which we have not reached yet, actually, which is surprising. We have more than 20,000 users. That's a lot of people.
There's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. But what I actually do, I think one strategy I learned was from Gartner. They always talked about this preventative support, like do it right from the beginning, you will not have support. So I actually spend a lot of time nagging the engineers on or the designers. So we have a very, very, very good designer. And as soon as I see people don't understand something, I will immediately go to him and I will like, hey, this they don't understand. They make the same mistake or ask the same question over and over again. What can we do? And then we try to change the design of the product and then we implement it. And therefore the problem then hopefully disappears. Or we just create another confusion, who knows? But that is like what we try to do. So that's number one. When it comes to reaching this stage, we haven't reached that stage and we seem to be pretty far away from it. At the moment, we only get of these 20,000 users, like a message twice a day, maybe.
Wow.
Okay, so that's like a problem. We can't hire somebody for two messages a day. No. That would be insanity. So we simply haven't reached and we seem to be very far away from them at the moment. I do think, though, that what we would do is hire a person that would be a onboarding specialist and a specialist at the support at the same time. So why do we do this? Because preventative support, meaning also explaining things properly, ensuring that the complex implementation of the system is done in an excellent way, is also a way to cut your future costs, meaning support costs, before they ever happen. And so everything is about that, as I see it. They should come to you if they want help or they want assistance or they have a question, that's fine, but we should avoid it if we can.
Yeah, that upfront investment can really save you downstream. One of the things that we've talked about in the past that fascinated me was developing channel support. So for those that aren't familiar, right, you can have different channels that actually will then go out and sell your product or partner with to be another place where people can find your product. Talk to me about channel support and how that is maybe similar to what you do and different and how you build that out.
Super good. So for you who are listening that maybe don't know who I am, it's probably 100% of you guys, but so I done channel sales for like 20 years or something like that. You're right, like that's another way to be preventative or kind of ensure that there's local support everywhere, a person that they trust. And I find it to be worth the money. So with Musk is we pay a very high fee to this partners, but I think it's worth everything because you would never speak to these customers anyway. So it's like, how would they even find you? When I think about partners, my job there supporting them is to give them as good as, or sometimes even better support than my customers. So they can answer any question, they can understand anything, and they will never remember anything, by the way. So you have to constantly repeat the same thing over and over again in their heads. But to help them and guide them and take care of them, and they will come up with new things that you didn't even think about. So last weekend, I went to New York and I met our partner from Dominica. Okay, and I really want to, for you who are listening there, like Dominica is a small island in the middle of nowhere with, I think it's 70,000 inhabitants. And I would say it is the most crowded Mushkin space because she managed to sell to two clients and she's like amazing. And very strange, but she's amazing. She understands the customer. She will customize or change our messaging. She will request things that are important for these customers. She simply collects the data and tells me what is needed, and I can then support her with whatever is needed to get things going and help this client to get things correctly installed and implemented and running and analytics and everything else. I think that's like a very interesting aspect of things. And it's extremely efficient, even though it maybe feel like it costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered the question. But...
yeah, do you spend time... So as you're going through development, I feel like this is something that a lot of companies struggle with is as you're going through development, right? Maybe you're doing a new release, you're adding new features. Are you documenting that and making all of that documentation then and something that's for not just for the engineering team, right? With release notes, but something that is putting this out there to those channel partners to talk about this particular change and how it impacts them, how it impacts the customer. Like, what's that process look like?
Exactly. This is, if there are one of the, there's four things that are extremely important to make things work, and that is communication. So to communicate with your partners extremely well is super important. So with much skills, with, as you know, we all have limited money and resources and time. So I invented like, okay, well, how do I make sure I communicate and help our partners? I created a partner portal using Notion. So, and you can even use the free version of Notion, I noticed. This is terrible. Anyway, so I used Notion. So I just simply just add everything there. So I create like sales documents or instructions, everything in Notion. I make Notion public. And I don't have any protection on it because I don't care. Like if a partner looks there or even a customer, it's okay. Doesn't matter. There's just instruction on how to do things. And then I give it to them with as much information as possible. And I see it as if my partner's there, they need as much information or preferably even more than my own salespeople or my own staff at all time. That's how good you need to be. If you do that right, you will have more and more amazing partners that actually can sell, even in a small island in the middle of nowhere in Dominica, to somebody who is not even your customer type normally, because they have the material. So really, really important. Never hesitate doing that. And I think from our story perspective, I was working in marketing before, and I learned some important things. I learned about content marketing. But I took that ability, that idea, and I made it more kind of support content marketing, or how we should call it, support material. And what we do is that we would use Strategizer's value proposition designer and think about our customers. And we think about their day. We think about the problems, the jobs they're trying to get done, the gains, the pains they have. And we then think, what can we do outside a little bit of what we do to help them? So for our customers and for our partners, we have created, for example, guides on how to do certain actions that have not really anything to do with our software, but will help our customers. As an example, we have a guide on how to do amazing one-on-ones with the employees, or a check-in, or what are the most important leadership skills in the world, or data about like why skills are important, like anything you can imagine, we have playbooks or instructions for. We make insane amount of videos, which saved us crazy amount of hours for every action you can imagine. And we do it super cheap. I literally sit down by my computer, record a video using Loom, cost $10. And I just record these videos and a lot of people watch them and it's good enough. Like it doesn't have to be perfect, even if you have mega clients like DHL and whatever they're called. So really, really cool. And then of course, we also do our own training material and onboarding material and everything else in perfection and give it to our clients and to our partners. The end goal for me is always that my customer and my partner should work as little as possible to start using our solution tomorrow.
Mm, love it.
But super hard, bro, though, but yeah.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about updating or keeping your materials updated, right? So you talked about training material, you talked about videos. What's that process look like? Because as things change, all of a sudden you may have something that like the video is no good anymore.
I'm so stressed at every release we do. I mean, I have so much work now. It's just crazy. So sometimes you're just too productive. And you know what? It's just what it is. Like, I can't do everything all the time. It's impossible. So yes, I mean, we have maybe, I think it's 20 videos or something like that. So I have to sit and re-record all of them. So even that, like, once again, I think we don't need it to be perfect. It's actually fun that is not perfect. I have at least convinced myself this is what you need to do. Doesn't mean it's right. I'm convinced myself, you know, perfection is not, you know, something we need. We just need something that is better than just text, because text is so hard for the clients to understand. It takes really hard time to write. So we have a combination of a shorter text plus video. As soon as there is a release, yeah, then I just sit and have to review every page, every video. If I need to re-record it, and if I need to, then I do that. I review the onboarding material, same thing there, and I have to redo material or rewrite it or something like that.
Yeah.
But of course, when I create all this stuff, I think about the future. So I try to make it as flexible as possible. So videos, I don't do too long videos. I do micro subjects. So it's like a subject around something like, hey, how do you do, I don't know, skill gap analysis, or how do I import the users? So it's a micro subject, and that doesn't change every week, you know, like it's okay.
Right. Yeah, make it modular so that if I have to replace something, it's something that's really small that I have to replace, as opposed to like doing a 30-minute video all of a sudden, which no one wants to do. No one wants to watch that either, I've found. So,
no, exactly. And then you do one mistake in the middle and you're like, no. Because you don't, when you use Loom, now you can cut a little bit. So that's nice. But before you couldn't do that. Like you literally, like it have to be perfect from start to end, 15 minutes in a row.
Wow. It's like,
because you're like lazy and you don't have time. So, yeah.
Right.
So funny.
I want to talk a little bit. Completely off subject. So tell me about the city that you grew up in, I assume, and still live in.
I don't. So I live in Gothenburg in Sweden. So further away from US, you could say, in Europe. But I didn't grow up here. So this is the second largest city. It's like very industrial. You know, Volvo is from here. The bearing was invented here, by the way, and things like that. But I grew up in the countryside. And when I say countryside, you know, like think Minnesota, you drive out in the middle of nowhere with all the forest and all that stuff. That's where I grew up. So it's like elks, like these giant cat animals that I don't remember the name in English, but they are very rare to see. There are very few on the planet, and like deers and stuff like that. So yeah, not much inspiration out there more than forest and moss and mushrooms, I guess.
Okay. Is this why so many Swedes move to Minnesota? Because it reminds them of home?
I think so, because I think it's insane. I mean, if you're now going to move to the States, like why do you find like the same forest? It's like, why? Like do something different. Nope, Minnesota. We want it to be cold and, you know, like, right. unfriendly.
Yes, please. Can it be dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the wintertime? And, you know, plenty below zero. And we have lots of water in Minnesota as well, right? I mean, that seems like also another defining feature that matches with Sweden.
I actually started to watch the Golden Girls. I don't know if you remember, I've seen series. I'm just like laughing and laughing because it's just so much fun. Obviously, all the words, everything she says is totally made up and have no relevance at all. But it's just so fun because partly it's true. Yeah.
Partly it's true. Okay. This is a key question that only a very small portion of my listening audience will care about or even know what I'm talking about. But I need to know, do you know PewDiePie?
Yeah, of course.
Really?
You know him personally. Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry, I know who he is, but I don't know him personally. No, unfortunately not. But he's a crazy YouTuber guy. He was the number one YouTuber in the world for a while. But now I'm sure it's some Korean or Indian or something like that. That should be number one, I would guess. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, but, you know, he is from Gothenburg. And I thought, well, I mean, it's a small world. You just never know. It seems like the kind of question that I get asked being from Kansas, like, well, actually, there's not really anyone famous from Kansas, but people will ask, you know, do you know so-and-so? Because they're clearly, you must know everyone there. And I thought, well, we just need to know if you know PewDiePie.
I don't know PewDiePie, but I did see, you know, Roxette, the band?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're from town. And yesterday, when we were flying back from New York to back to Sweden, he was actually at the airport, and I went to the bathroom. So now I'm very starstruck. So when I went out of the bathroom, he took and entered the bathroom that I have been to. I mean, this is a big moment for me. So it was the Per Gessle. Unfortunately, the other person in the band, Marie, she has passed away from cancer, but he was there at least. So he entered the door.
That's amazing. Did he have the look?
He did definitely have the look. Well done. Well done.
Well,
shit, I saw him. This is like insane. This is crazy. But yeah.
Brushes with celebrities sometimes inspire really weird feelings in people, right? They're just another person. They're doing something that they probably are passionate about. And yet we get really excited about that person just because they're really well known. Maybe because they're really good at something and we love it, or they've created something that we're that we love. But it is interesting to me that there's this fascination with celebrity that we have. I mean, I've got four celebrities right behind me.
Yeah.
And that is, right, I can only imagine how I would feel if I ran into Paul McCartney in the bathroom. Like, that would be a story for sure.
Well, as a proper Swede, I didn't say anything, and I pretended not to know who he was, and I, of course, walked away. That's what a proper Swede would do.
You were polite, just like a Midwesterner, like someone from Minnesota.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And we don't care about famous people. That's probably why a bunch of them live here, because you can actually go to a bar and they're not crazy people that wants your autograph everywhere. Very interesting from that perspective. And he's like a really cool person, actually. He owns like a hotel, and his wife is an art collector, and the hotel is like very interesting and very different. And he actually is in another band that's very famous in Sweden, but they only sing in Swedish. And it is ultra popular songs, like, you know, the song when you're like as really happy and you're dancing on the dance floor and you're really drunk. That's what you will be listening to.
Well, I'm going to have to look this up now, and I won't understand a word of it, but I feel like I need to just know now that you've introduced me to this. So what's the name of this band?
How do I even say this? Called Gyllene Tider. I'm trying to say
it. I'm not going to know how to spell that. So we may have to communicate via chat later.
Yeah.
And
the translation is The Golden Times. So that would be the American version of it, if you now translate it. But Gyllene Tider, that would be the name if you would look for it. But I think you can just find him as an artist on Spotify, and you could probably check it out.
That's probably the way to go. Probably the way to go. Okay, so enough about YouTube celebrities and music. I'm curious, you know, we've talked a lot about building out support, both strategically and tactically, and how you can reduce really the need for it. What's one thing that we haven't talked about yet that you think is important to bring to the conversation?
That's really good. I think, one thing we could talk about is the skills of a person doing support. I thought a lot about it lately, you know, thinking about how we should expand and what we should do. And it is, I was in the US working for a client called Volution. They have like this e-commerce platform and help them do some things. And I had interviewed a bunch of people in support, and it's really interesting. The really best support people, they have this, like, they just love to help people. I don't know what it is, but that's what they really prefer. And I think, like, if we want to hire these kind of individuals, we should look for the person that would kind of like mention that as soon and early as possible. They just love to help people. And I found it interesting that these people were kind of like a little bit introvert almost. And like, you're like on the phone all the time. Like, how does this even make sense? But they're so interested to help people. They don't care that they have to talk to somebody or like be externalized. That's their passion. That's what they want to do. And maybe that's an extremely important feature to have, because helping a client when they are really annoying and aggressive is not easy. Which happens in certain products in certain countries, you know, they're extra aggressive even, and it's very hard to cool them down and things like that. You have to have extremely high empathy, really high emotional intelligence, really high patience, and just taking care of that. So that I found very interesting. And another skill that I reflect around is that, I'm sure you have done this. You know, you contact this company, like I contacted ActiveCampaign, or I contacted, and they're like, Stripe also, like their support, I would say, is the worst on the planet. Like, they are so incompetent. I get angry just thinking. When you know, you explain your problem, you're like, I have a question, and you feel the question is so simple, and you just ask the question, and then they send you back 500 questions. You answer all that, taking a long time. Then you get back even more questions and no answers to anything. And you're kind of like frustrated, like, I just want to get an answer to this question. Can you please help me? And you're like almost begging on your knees, and still they don't help you. It's just like, so I found it to be important, like the ability to be an active listener or an active reader, and then actively think about what is this poor person, this poor soul on the other side trying to get done. That's a very good ability to have if you want to do outstanding and amazing support. But yeah, it's a hard one to train though. And that what I would say, like when I worked for that IT security company back in the day, when I really started to do support, like that was the biggest problem with the engineers. They were too quick. They would just quickly answer something like, oh, this is it. And you're like, no, read what the person is saying here. Like, carefully read. You will see that is not what the person wants. They want something else. Have you given them that alternative? Have you told them these things? You know, like, oh. But yeah, it's super hard. I don't know how to tip on how to handle that. I'm just generally frustrated that this needs to be done.
You're definitely aligned with David Allison, who I recently had on the show. And we talked about how people make decisions not based on data, but based on values. And we talked specifically about people in contact centers and support. And he said that the people that are really good at that value helping people and making a difference. And So you're absolutely right. Finding those people that say, well, I just really like to help people, whether or not they have some of those other skills, right? Even when you think about support in the SaaS world, a lot of people think, well, you need to be really tech savvy. Not necessarily, right? You need to be the kind of person that wants to help, is willing to learn, and can be empathetic and understand what that end user really needs. And sometimes that requires reading through the lines and putting yourself in their shoes. Again, that empathetic piece. But if you really want to help, I can teach you the rest of it.
Exactly, exactly. But that is so hard. Like, yeah. I mean, you have to validate if they really want to help when you're hiring them. And I don't even know how to validate that. You like, you're trying to sneak it into the interview somewhere, or like you have to look for examples, or you have to challenge them in some kind of way. But really tricky to find that value and the will and the energy and excitement actually to want to help somebody.
Yeah, it is definitely a challenge. And for longtime listeners, there may be another episode about hiring people and a specific tool that you can use that can help you with that. Hint, hint. All right.
No, I think Daniel, that's good. It will be needed.
Yeah, it has been fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much. If people want to learn more about you or Much Skills or Up Strategy or Proto Anything or all the other companies that you are working with today, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
They can just Google anything, and our little chat bot will be at the bottom and you can contact me directly. No, I think you can, if you're super interested in anything I do, I actually have a blog, but I think maybe you will post that or something, so you could just see little things I've written, everything from how to create a partner program, how to build a value proposition, to anything. I give everything for free. There's like no, there's no sales going on at all. It's because I needed myself for me, and then I decided to write it in a way where I could share it with everybody and get feedback, which then made me learn even more. So it was super exciting. Probably what,
or they could they could just go to the website and get your phone number and call you.
Yeah, they could actually do that. So, but please don't call me 1 o'clock in the morning.
Daniel, thank you so much.
Thank you for
being here on Next in Queue. I really appreciate it.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy Two and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe and or rate this podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.